really has been kicked into gears in the last like 2 years, and especially over the past year, where you're seeing more of these far right white supremacists. They're combating them, and again, this mainstream media is very rarely touching on it or talking
The point I wanted to make, though, is if you do, obviously, ever since this happened, number one, because I knew we would be talking about it on the show, and number two, because I'm a can't look away kind of person. I've been watching video after video, both professionally taken and, you know, taken by someone's cell phone. And I am not by any means saying that the left weren't also violent. Obviously, they were. There's video of the white supremacists being maced.
If you try and justify it, you're going to be in trouble.
I'm not going to justify it.
Choose your words carefully.
I'm going to choose my words very carefully. But first of all, the initial protest, the first, or I should say the initial demonstration the first night was 30 UVA students standing together around the statue and having these white supremacists literally pull them off of it while holding sticks of fire. That was
tiki torches
for lack of Walmart or Home Depot.
If it has a Hawaiian lei around it, I am not intimidated.
But my point being that, and I'm not in any way condoning violence on either side, because obviously we've learned not just from this, but from many instances beforehand, hasn't solved anything yet. But you come in there chanting all these hateful things, armed, talking about how you're armed, with a lot of them were, you know, before even the following day, a lot of them were very clearly carrying some sort of weapon,
It's an open carry state.
But what I'm saying is, and again, cannot say, because I know you're going to jump down my throat, cannot say vehemently enough, not condoning violence from either side. But it was going in, especially if you watch the Vice video where the reporter is interviewing Christopher Cantwell. He openly says, I'm carrying a pistol right now. I go to the gym all the time. I'm trying to make myself more capable of violence. They did not come in there with exuding the feeling of we're here for a peaceful protest.
No, of course they didn't.
They came in there exuding the feeling of we're here to throw down.
Of course they did.
And that's not legitimizing people not.
But here's the thing. This has been their MO all along. And what did it take to get 1,000 people to show up in their cargo shorts with their tiki torches? Mm-hmm. It took Richard Spencer and former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke putting out a nationwide call to rustle up 1,000 people to show up and march around with tiki torches looking like a bunch of idiots, okay? Of course they're there to be violent. Of course they're there to cause problems. If nobody confronts them, then all they can do is march around like a bunch of idiots and then go home.
But this group isn't touched on much, and we're talking about the left, by media, because look at what happened last year when...
Let's stay on this. No, don't bring anything else into this conversation. Just Charlottesville, okay? Just Charlottesville.
Exactly, but you're saying this is something that the media is not talking about. So I'm giving you examples of why the media is not talking about it. You want to talk about in Seattle when the far left group attacked people, pro-speech Trump supporters? You want to talk about in Berkeley when they harassed many people? You
I
want
believe
to talk
it happened
about
in Portland as well.
The reason the media is out for this one. The reason the media is out for this one is because it's a slow news weekend, and here's a ready-made photo op. We're gonna have... I don't think anybody expected they were going to show up with tiki torches, which, I mean, come on. This is your white power movement. We have tiki torches and we're not afraid to use them. Get a life, guy.
I think it's also because, and you can disagree with me, obviously, if you like, you always do. But I think it also has to do with that, like the places that Lisa was bringing up, like, you know, like Seattle and Berkeley and places like that are places that I think by and large the country views as these very liberal, progressive, earthy, crunchy type places. Whereas part of what makes this story so sensational is that by and large, Charlottesville, yeah, it's a college town. It's a city. It's not like some bohunk town. But at the same time, I feel that a lot of times people just kind of associate certain areas of the country with certain movements, with certain ideologies. And the fact there were, that there was such a backlash from the left in Virginia makes it that much more of a sensational story.
Seattle had a white nationalist rally on Sunday.
Cute.
There was a big white nationalist rally in Seattle on Sunday. And the left showed up. You know why you probably are just hearing about this now? Because there was no violence. You know why there was no violence? Because Seattle, which has seen more than its fair share of rioting over the course of the last 20 years, beginning with the World Trade Conference, mm-hmm. Seattle has regularly played host to leftists smashing windows, mm-hmm. smashing ATMs, rolling over cars, setting fires in the streets, destroying police cars, the whole nine yards, rubber bullets, smoke grenades, everything. So if you're going to get a riot anywhere, a lot of us just say, oh, Seattle, yeah, they'll riot. No, because the Seattle police put up barricades and kept everybody on opposite sides of the street.
Mm-hmm. So and stopped people from walking in with sticks.
So everybody, now we get to the heart of this issue. And I said we were going to talk about what happened in Charlotte. Okay. What happened in Charlottesville is the freaking cops didn't do their jobs.
Of course.
That's what happened in Charlottesville.
I sat so confused all of Saturday at the places that I was at it, and I was getting updates on my phone, and I'm like, what is going on? What is going on? I'm trying to update my phone and figure out, and I did. I was sat stunned watching the coverage from it and not understanding why local and state police did absolutely nothing to prevent this.
If you look
They were backed up by armored cars. You had police decked out in riot gear. And whether they were on stand down or not, and there have been conflicting voices of that, we don't know. I believe they were on a stand down. But it's crazy to me.
If you look at the footage from Friday night, and I recommend that you watch it with the sound off, because you're not going to hear anything that will enrich your life in any way, shape, or form. Nobody's... Yes, they've got their cargo shorts and their flip-flops and their Walmart, Home Depot tiki torches. Some of them have pistols on their hips or what have you. But they're not wearing helmets. They're not carrying shields. They're dressed like they just got out of the office, which a lot of them mm-hmm. probably did, other than the tiki torches. And the police are standing by and letting this happen because other than some pushing and shoving at the monument, there was no violence that night. Now we flash forward to Saturday morning, and we've all seen the video. People are walking around with their homemade riot gear. They got their motorcycle helmets on, and their football helmets, and their bike helmets, and their homemade trash can shields, and their sticks, and their billy clubs, or whatever else they could find to hand. And they are marching into the street to engage in gladiatorial combat with each other. And there is not a police officer mm-hmm. in sight in any of that footage.
No, riot police stood rooted in formation and quietly watching fascists, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, anti-fascists, religious leaders, Black Lives Matters, every single group, as you just described, in that gear. And it almost gives claim to the statement that they don't care about violence against right-wing protesters.
Well, I don't think anybody... Look, I am firmly on the side of if you want to kick a white supremacist in the ass, you should be able to.
But again, okay? we're going to...
But go do that on your own property.
But again,
don't do it
is
in a public
protected.
Park.
Yeah. I don't agree with what white supremacists do or say. But again, it is the jobs of police... job to protect these people.
Correct.
Regardless of what side you are on.
Correct.
This speech is protected under the First Amendment rights. It doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what you say. Police's job is to protect you.
The other thing that the police were supposed to do was shut down the side street where Heather Heyer was killed.
Yes.
Well,
and no one has come up with a reasonable answer as to why the perpetrator's car was on the street, or why the other two cars were on the street. No one was supposed to be able to drive over there.
I would say, well, and ironically, if the intel, and of course, you know, with a story like this, there's stories and reasonings and theories and all of this flying from every direction. But ironically, part of the reason that the cars were there in the first place was because the police had basically declared a state of emergency, said they had to get out of Emancipation Park. So they were moving to another park, which is why those cars were trying to drive there in the first place, which is why the left was trying to block them from being able to move. And that's what, if you listen to what some of the white supremacist leaders talk about in reference to the, what's his name? I always try not purposely not to remember killers' names, but this 19-year-old, 20-year-old from Ohio.
That'd be Mr. Fields.
Yes, Mr. Fields. Thank you. James Alex Fields Jr. If you listen to like Christopher Cantwell, for example, talk about it, he said, oh, well, people were in his way and he was trying to get through so he could get to the other park. That's why he did that. Mm-hmm.
No, but the police failures in
And I'm in no way
could have been avoided.
Yeah, all of this could have been avoided.
The police had cared to learn anything from past
protests. The road
protests.
Is supposed to be closed to all traffic.
Yes.
All traffic. That doesn't mean some traffic gets through. The road is supposed to be closed to all traffic. Again, I have to ask, where are the police? Because ultimately, the blame for what happens in Charlottesville falls on the police. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for police officers. Anyone who listens to this show knows that. I am pro-cop. I'm pro-local cop. I'm pro-state cop. Good cops have a very difficult and thankless job, and I support them 100%. I don't understand why the police were not in the area where the violence was happening. I don't understand why those roads weren't closed. And no one who was attacked that day seems to have any idea where the police were.
Well, and even if you watch footage of the night before, there is...
There's cops. You can see cops in all of those shots.
Well, what's funny is that as the cops are in the shots, but again, as Lisa was saying, kind of standing down, standing on the sidelines. And as they finally did start to move in, it was as everything was dispersing. And one person actually said to them, like, you missed it all. Like, just be ready for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like...
You know, one of the
lessons is going to get worse, as it did.
One of the lessons from Ferguson in 2014 that we learned, I think, was large militarized police formations don't work. And when you have protest anger, they leave police flat-footed. Now,
I'm sorry, but.
But essentially, what you had in Ferguson, which almost you had mimicked here, but not at such a large scale.
Ferguson, you can't draw a comparison. Ferguson was a spontaneous series of protests that were directed against the police.
Here's what happened. It's not like there were permits.
What happened in Charlottesville was you had a bunch of white supremacists come to town.
Maybe I can make some comparison with a permit, for you.
Come to town with a permit, and then you have a couple thousand counter protesters come to town with a permit. And everybody's wearing their homemade riot gear and nobody's doing anything about it.
I understand. What I'm saying is a comparison that I'm trying to make is that the fact that you had a large formation of police in Ferguson standing around while in the center, you had all of the people that could do whatever they want, light anything they want on fire, throw things, create violence. This is what you had going on in Charlottesville. You had police standing around and watching the center of this happening. This is a comparison that I'm making. I'm not making a comparison.
It's not a reasonable comparison. You're 100% apples and oranges.
I do agree. No,
because the people who
agree.
Police on the outside doing absolutely
nothing. The people who are in Charlottesville are not there to fight the police. They are there to fight each other. The people who were in Ferguson were there to fight the cops.
But nonetheless,
yeah,
I think that the point
half of them were, and half of them were just setting fire and attacking whatever they could.
And nonetheless, I think the point that Lisa's making is that
you had violence in both scenarios, regardless of who it was.
In both scenarios, the police were there. Standing guard and a police presence is clearly, in any scenario, not enough. Just simply having the police there is not enough. Having them stand by and watch all of this happen, whether it be Ferguson in the situation Lisa's referring to, whether it be in Charlottesville, which we're talking about right now, obviously the tactic that has been put in place in these various instances is not working.
What happened?
Having them stand by with their shields, regardless of what they're fighting, what's being fought about, what anything. It's not
you had
working.
Violence in the center. What are police supposed to do?
What happened?
One, protect people.
Police,
two.
Police can't, number one, police cannot do anything against a riot when they are outnumbered, okay? Ferguson was a police operation designed to contain the damage and the violence to a specific area. Anybody who went into that area knew what they were getting into.
Yeah, but at the height of what Ferguson was, you were... Not that much outnumbered.
Anybody who went into that area knew what they were getting into. Okay? They knew what they were walking into. The police were there to keep it from spreading outside of a certain area of the city and to defend public buildings as best they possibly could.
They practically let a city burn.
They didn't have a choice in the matter.
So you're talking about keeping it contained. We had a city that was pretty much, how many millions of dollars?
They didn't have...
That was contained?
They did not have any choice in the matter. Okay.
Any choice in the matter. They had military backup.
What are you going to do? Shoot Americans? Is that your solution? People start rioting? We're going to shoot them?
No, but
is that what you want?
When you have an armed force around you, I think there's a proper way that you can stop people that are throwing rocks and bottles.
No, you cannot. You cannot. You go into that crowd, you're going to get people killed. And the goal in Ferguson was to keep that violence in one place and to allow it to burn out and to protect other areas from it. That's what Ferguson was.
Then, yes, we differ what happened in the failures of police. Because,
Charlottesville.
Because there have been many, many research done on the failures of police in Ferguson. So if you think that was a right tactic of what they did, then sure.
Well, it's a matter of, did the police kill people, or do they just sit by and watch people kill each other?
I'm not making a judgment as to whether or not it's the right tactic. I'm saying it is a completely different situation because you have, in the case of Ferguson, a police officer has killed a black man, and the black community is upset about this.
And at no point was I making any comparison to the situation.
And would like nothing more, some of them, not all of them, but certainly some of them, would like nothing more than to exact some revenge on police officers. You cannot compare that to a situation like Charlottesville, where white nationalists have come from all over the country to make their feeble stand for white power in their cargo shorts and their polo shirts with their homemade riot gear, and a bunch of haters on the left have shown up to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I go back to Seattle. Again. I go back to Seattle. The same thing happened in Seattle on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know why there was no violence in Seattle? Because the police kept the sides separate.
Yeah, because this has been going on in Seattle.
Everybody who showed up with their clubs and their homemade riot gear couldn't riot. All you could do was riot among your friends.
Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of, I think that's the point, is it's a matter of not just being ready for it, but enforcing proper protocol, the proper tactic in which to make that happen.
When you see people walking down the street in homemade riot gear, you throw them in the back of the van.
No, absolutely.
And you take them to the police station. And when the police station is full, you open up a gymnasium and you start taking them there.
No.
And you take the white supremacists to one gymnasium, and you take the left-wing haters to another gymnasium, and you keep them away from each other. And then at sundown, you tell everybody to go home. You give them all $500 tickets for public mayhem. And tell them not to do it again. And you don't have any violence.
Of course, but officials
in
Charlottesville...
If people aren't walking around in homemade riot gear with sticks and bottles of urine and pepper spray and guns, you let them go about their business and have their protest.
There were a lot of people, though, that were involved in that. And officials in Charlottesville should have been prepared for weeks in both the area and the park before, during, and after the scheduled events. Officers should have been deployed to different areas and not just one single area around, especially where the car went through. Mobile teams should have been alerted. This is what they've done in other areas of the country. Well, this is what something that Seattle did well.
Well, and particularly as well, I think that, for lack of a better term, a preemptive strike, and I'm not saying strike, but for example, as I'm sure most people have heard by now, there is going to be a rally of a similar nature in Boston Common this weekend.
Yeah.
The permit was actually issued today by the Boston Parks Department.
And guess what Boston Police Chief Chris Evans is
going to
do?
He's not going to allow any sticks or backpacks.
Bill.
And
Bill Evans.
Not just that. If you are on the right, you get to be in one area. If you're on the left, you get to be in another area.
Again, but a bigger fear is that this is going to be bad. In Charlottesville, yes, police should have been more on it with trying to confiscate flagpoles, everything that they were using to attack each other.
Boston PD is saying, why
didn't that happen? Why didn't the Charlottesville police stop those people? Why didn't they confiscate
the
weapons?
Again, I'm not understanding.
Why didn't they take those people and throw them in a gymnasium, throw them in a police station, throw them in a football stadium? You go over there with your sticks.
Well, this is a standard practice for police in New York City and many other major cities across
the
country.
I've seen all the protests that take place in New York City. I've been in New York City when protests are going on. I've had protests walk by me. You know what you will never see in New York City? It's people walking down the street in homemade riot gear with sticks and bats. Because the second an NYPD cop sees you in public, armored up like you're spoiling for a fight, you're going to the back of a squad car.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing that I can, and I'm in no way making excuses for the Charlottesville Police Department, but the only thing that I can even fathom as to any sort of excuse as to why they are not better prepared, why they did not get in front of this with both pre-stated rules about what you can and cannot have and enforcing said rules, is that, as I mentioned before, they're not New York City. They're not Boston. They're not Seattle.
Do they not watch television?
But nonetheless,
do they not know what happened in Berkeley?
It's the classic human thought of, it's not going to happen to me. They're a college town. They're used to breaking up drunken brawls.
The state police were involved in this.
I'm not making excuses, but you said, why? I'm trying to provide some sort of semblance of maybe a possible reasonable answer.
No, and some police should have been deployed outside and wore regular uniforms and tried to get into the middle of it and have some sort of conversation. This is a tactic that is often used by high-ranking officers in Chicago to try to get in the middle, when possible, when safe, to get in the middle of these and figure out the tensions, the environment. Were there times where this riot, it was not proper that somebody go in and try to figure out the verbiage between the two sides? Yes. No. But there could have been an opportunity.
It's not like
almost like a hostage negotiation.
It's not like
have someone
these,
come in and try to speak rationally. Maybe you can talk people down.
It's not like all these people materialized out of the ground armed to the teeth. They walked in. The point for the police to do something is the point where people are walking in their homemade riot gear. And you say to them, nope, you have a right to be here, but you got to take all that stuff off, put it back in your car, and come back with nothing on you but your hands. By the way, no backpacks if you're protesting in Boston on Friday. You can't bring anything.
I'm going to say, I think you literally can't bring a bag.
Yeah.
Or at least anything larger than a wallet.
This is the way that you do it, okay? Because we see protests in New York. We see protests in Boston. We see protests in Cambridge. You don't see riots break out because the police, and police talk to each other all over the country. They knew what was coming down in Charlottesville. This wasn't surprising to anybody.
No, you had to say, though, hopefully.
Maybe you had more homemade riot-armed leftists show up than you expected, but you knew the white supremacists were coming down there and they were looking to fight somebody.
Hopefully, though, police commanders will learn something from these recent failures and develop some sort of more effective form of policing to maintain the right to protest.
Yes.
But also engaging and enhancing public safety.
Here's a start.
Is that crazy? Because police are supposed to do that.
No homemade riot gear at the protest. No backpacks, no bottles, no nothing.
No, but in the end, what it comes down to is the outbreak is a political violence. It's a political problem, and it needs to be solved through political process.
It's not going to be solved through a political process. It is going to be solved through street-level violence, because that's the way we do it in America. That's the way we've always done it in America.
Yeah, but policing, no matter how nuanced and sophisticated,
unless the police break up the street fight. The police are there to break up the street fight and maintain order. They completely and utterly failed to maintain order, and as a result, a number of people were beaten. A woman was killed. 19 other people were injured when an idiot drove a car into a crowd. Two state police officers very sadly lost their life in a helicopter crash. All of this can be avoided. All of this can be avoided if the police do their job in the first place. And when you see the people walking down the street dressed up like they're going off to some Roman battlefield with whatever they could find at Walmart or Dick's Sporting Goods to protect them, turn them around. Tell them, nope, can't come down here with that. The First Amendment does not give you the right to attend a protest with a stick. It gives you a right to go to a protest.
I was going to say, it gives you a right to peaceful
protest. You can go protest all you want. And by the way, as much as I have an issue with the left and the way that they behaved in this thing, I get it. Just because you're opposed to something doesn't mean you hit your fellow Americans. We do not resort to street violence anymore. So we thought, yes, that's the history of America. That's how we've always done it. We like to think we're better than that now. We had big Klan rallies around here when I was a kid. I remember them. And you know what happened when the Klan came to town? Other people would show up and scream at them until they left. And maybe you threw eggs. Mm-hmm. I will support throwing eggs at the Ku Klux Chad.
The tainted eggs.
Okay, you can huck eggs at the white supremacists, but that's it. That's where I'm drawing the line. You shouldn't even be able to do that.
How long does it take for eggs to spoil? Maybe I'll just go over to the State House, leave some like sitting on the brim.
Summertime, leave them out overnight, you're good to go. The police utterly failed. Charlottesville happened because the police utterly failed. And this idea, and Charlottesville is not the first place that we have seen left-wing agitators showing up with masks on, in homemade battle gear, with sticks and bats, and bottles full of urine and pepper spray. We need to crack down on that on both sides, because in Charlottesville, both sides came into that thing ready to fight. And it's honestly one of the stupidest things I've ever seen Americans do. If we cannot have a protest and a counter-protest without people dressing up in their homemade riot gear, then you got to start pulling permits. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. At the very least.
Yeah, pull permits before you have to declare a state of emergency.
They tried. The ACLU sued, and the ACLU was 100% right to do that, because as much as we disagree with the white supremacists, they have protected speech in this country. They have a right to come in and spout their nonsense and march around in their flip-flops with their tiki torches from Walmart and Home Depot and play Nazi. And then go home and be the impotent dum-dums that they are. But for one night, we're going to be all white power over here, looking stupid. Mm-hmm. The police failed. The police utterly failed. And the media has failed us by not calling attention to that. Instead, we have been listening to 4 days of What Did Donald Trump Say? And that's what we're going to talk about next here on WMFO Medford.
Promises and every stop. Out in the distance I could hear some people laughing. I felt my heart beat back, a weekend's worth of sadness. There was a farmhouse that had long since been deserted. We stopped and carved our hearts to the wooden surface. We thought just for an instant we could see the future. And we thought for once we knew what really was important. Dylan tape. We drove around the fields until till it started getting late. And I went back to my hotel room on the highway. And he just got back in his car and drove away.
Weeks, 14 days, 326 hours. Every second that your family could be exposed to radiation after a nuclear attack. Radiation that kills.
To survive, a fallout shelter is a necessity. Equipment and supplies are essential.
Now, Survive All Shelters, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, offers a basic equipment kit with
a Conelrad high-powered radio, transistor-operated for long battery life,
a complete, fully stocked first aid kit,
a heavy-duty fire extinguisher, emergency water containers, a chemical toilet for protection against contamination and disease,
extra-strength Saran and Rayon bunks,
a radiation meter and individual dosimeters.
For protection, every second of each hour of every day. See a survive-all shelter now.
Ranger station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
One second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. She's Chase Blaine. He's Derek Airey, and I'm Lisa Nichols, here with you every Wednesday night, 7 to 9. As always, you can be a part of the show. Call us at 855-915-9636. Again, that's 855-915-WMFO. And we are going to continue our conversation with the events that happened over the weekend. And we are talking in great length in this show because this is a situation with the events that we were talking about earlier that warrants more time than just our standard half an hour segment.
Yeah.
And
which is never half an hour anyway, because you guys always drag out, did you hear in the news, to obscene lengths.
So in the second part of the show, we gave you what actually happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the events that led from Friday night all the way into the riots that happened on Saturday, where both sides stood, and the failures of the police of Charlottesville. But now we're going to take a look into the response that our president had started with. Now, it initial response came on Saturday.
Yeah.
So this is after the riots had begun. President Trump offered, I guess you could say, somewhat of a tepid response, and condemning the, quote, hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides.
Well,
now that's the quote that everybody's talking about, how he said on Saturday, on many sides are the three words that especially mainstream media is focusing on, highlighting, bolding.
He added in the phrase on many sides, by the way. That was not in the original statement.
That was prepared for
that
him.
Was a Donald Trump
editorialism.
Yes, it was a Donald Trump last-minute audible on that statement.
Yeah. Now, as we know, Trump sometimes can catch lightning with his hand.
Yes.
And say some really great things. I know she's probably cringing. But then sometimes he burns his hand. Of course, his remarks were met with scorn across the political statement. That's an understatement. Then again, on Monday, the president gave somewhat of a much bolder statement saying, quote, racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups. So
everybody's like, hey, great. He finally, okay, he said the right thing. And of course, you got those on the left who are like, well, he didn't say it soon enough. The people who are never going to be satisfied no matter what he says.
Now we go to yesterday. Trump took a step back.
Would you like to take a trip into the lobby of Trump Tower and hear, here's a choice cut from...
I was going to say, I've got about 30 of the quotes written down, so I'm very excited to see which one you choose.
Here's a choice cut from the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen.
What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, with clubs in their hand, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do. You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent. I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee. This week it's Robert E. Lee.
All right, we're not going to get into this next part of it.
I was going to say, do you want me to start screaming? Because
I
will.
I can't, because ultimately... ultimately,
it's Thomas Jefferson and George Washington.
Oh, that made my... blood curdle.
Ultimately, our president took it to a point where he said there were fine people on both sides.
Yeah.
Mr. President.
I think that Jimmy Kimmel put it best. I don't know if anyone saw his monologue, which I thought was just brilliant. But Jimmy Kimmel put it best saying, if there were fine people on the, as I know we're not using that word on this show, but on the alt-right side, I believe that's how Kimmel put it.
Just call them white supremacists.
But on the white supremacist side, the minute that they started screaming racial and homophobic expletives, any of those fine people would have stepped out and walked away.
Pretty much.
As he said, not all those people were neo-Nazis. Believe me, not all those people were white supremacists. By any stretch, you had people, as Derek said, there were very fine people on both sides. You had many people in the group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists. Now, where I come from, if you have a group that is gathering... that is representing the alt-right or white supremacists, and I happen to walk in it, I would quickly exit myself because I don't want to be involved with that because I don't believe in that.
You are the company you keep.
A person with some sort of level of intelligence would say, if I don't belong here, maybe I should take a step back.
Yeah.
So yes, all those people, in fact, were white supremacists, were neo-Nazis, were not good people. There are no fine people in that group.
Yeah,
I'm
there was
sorry.
No, and if there were, they bowed out 2 seconds into realizing what it was actually about.
You are.
Maybe there were people who approached really solely just because they thought that a piece of history was being removed.
You are way ahead of me, Shay, because I was going to say, one of the things that my parents drilled into me when I was a young man is that you are the company that you keep.
Yeah.
And when the Ku Klux Chad is walking down the street in their cargo shorts and their polo shirts with their Walmart and Home Depot tiki torches trying to play Nazi, if you are walking with them, even if you're not chanting, Jews will not replace me and blood and soil, even if you're walking a good distance behind them, your presence enables them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These people,
they just look at you as a number, another
people,
part of the herd.
These white supremacists, the Ku Klux Chad, are lonely, bitter, isolated people whose only joy in life comes from talking to each other on the internet and occasionally getting together for a Home Depot tiki torch rally. Okay? That's the only. And when they get together, the more people are there, the bolder that they feel.
Exactly.
So even if you're just there because you think we should continue to support historic representations of people who deliberately slaughtered black Americans, which I got to question your political philosophy there. If you're hanging out with these guys, even if you don't share their beliefs, if you're in the same place and you're not protesting, you're supporting.
Yeah.
You may not intend to support, but your mere presence gives them a little bit more courage and a little bit more power, and their little 3-inch penises get just a little bit harder.
And as I said before, it would be different if, which of course, as we discussed, white supremacists are pretty much always at least implying violence, implying that they're ready for violence.
Yeah.
But it would have been completely different if it was some white supremacists, some neo-Nazis, and then some just Southerners that didn't want the statue to go away, having a sit-in around the statue saying, like, save Robert E. Lee, or, like, keep this, like, saying something having just to do with that.
No, somebody...
But these are not what these people are about.
Oh, no,
especially
but
if we're
just
talking
saying,
about...
In terms of making lump statements...
Confederism, yeah.
It's like, you can't... In that case, you'd be like, okay, maybe there are some people there that aren't part of this... zeitgeist, if you will, but the like you said, the sheer fact, even if they weren't chanting, even if they were walking a bit ways behind, if you're in this group, it's just like in high school, you hang out with all the potheads. Doesn't matter if you don't smoke pot, people are gonna think you're a pothead.
No,
but going back to what Donald Trump's response was, and yes, we heard it, and so many times he's made a statement right after and has used the soundbite of, I don't have the information. No. I don't have the research. If I'm going to give you a proper statement, I want facts on it. Now, political analysts said that Trump's drawn-out response was part of this sort of double game in an effort to avoid alienating, as, you know, we understand, a base that has followed him around this entire election.
I'm not
into
buying that, by the way.
Why, though?
I'm not buying that.
Well, the thing that bothers me about that...
You don't think he's
that,
playing both sides?
No, I don't, because I don't... This is where I'm going to break with all of the pundits.
So you think it's ignorance?
And everybody else. I don't know that I'd necessarily describe it as ignorance either. And let me try to explain this as best I possibly can. Donald Trump is not a racist. Donald Trump is not a white supremacist. Donald Trump is someone arguably worse because he is completely indifferent.
He's a megalomaniac.
It's not that he's a megalomaniac.
Well, I shouldn't say he's a megalomaniac. Donald Trump cares about Donald Trump. He doesn't care about the alt-right. He doesn't care about the alt-left. He doesn't care about the centrists.
It's not even that. He is completely indifferent to people.
That's what I mean.
He has a business mindset, and that's how his brain works.
Because you're talking about a guy who has never spent a day in the real world. You're talking about somebody who was born into privilege, who was raised in privilege, who went to school in privilege, who graduated into privilege, who was given millions of dollars to establish his own privilege.
So he was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple.
Yes.
What you do, what you believe in, is your thing.
And in Donald,
that's his mindset.
Donald Trump's worldview, the only things that exist are money and power. Okay? And you need money to get power. And I sincerely believe that Donald Trump thinks that's the way the world works for everybody. He doesn't understand that if you're born black in the United States, you
have a certain set of obstacles just set up right
so
from the get-go.
So is that partially ignorance then?
It's not just that you're not playing with a full deck. It's that somebody took every card over a five away from you and said, here you go. Try and make something out of yourself.
Well, I do think that Lisa's right, though.
I don't think he gets it.
I do think that it is.
But that's ignorance.
But it's not...
Partially, because
it is partially ignorance. I agree with Lisa.
You cannot say that
because there are plenty of privileged people.
Minor delusion, though.
Ignorance, as I understand it, and I may be alone in my definition of this, but ignorance to me connotes some level of willfulness that I am going to turn away, and I am going to ignore evidence that is put in front of me.
So I guess naivety would be a better word,
possibly. I don't think Donald Trump even knows that world beneath him exists.
But the thing is, I'd like to call into question someone like, and I agree with you, but when you're the president of the United States, even if that is true about you, you have to at least have some sort of tact and diplomacy and level of, think of George W. Bush. George W. Bush was born into like an oil tycoon family. His dad was president. He never struggled for anything in his life either. But he at least, he stuck to the script when people wrote speeches for him. Yeah,
But you know what you're doing here? You're asking somebody who spent 71 years living in a desert. You take somebody who spent 71 years living in a desert, never left the desert, drop them into the middle of an Arctic hurricane and ask them to come up with a word for snow. They're not going to be able to. They don't understand what they're seeing.
Every president prior to him, even if that is or is not true, whether they're a peanut farmer or an oil tycoon or a real estate tycoon, as it may be, had a set of advisors around them that helps them understand that, or at least pretend really well to.
Yes, but
when he was talking about how he wanted to wait for the facts, and he thought the way he said it on Saturday was a really good way of doing it because he didn't have all the facts yet, and other people had facts that he didn't. He's the president.
If anyone gets facts before everyone else,
it is him.
No, the president does not get facts before everyone else.
But Derek, what you're painting in the picture of somebody that is completely enthralled in a business mindset and only understands money and power and does not have any grasp of the outside world. That, to me, calculates to intelligence, because an intelligent person can understand the way that people work, that understand what each side represents. And one is good, infinitely good, and one is bad, where we're dealing with two bad but on different levels.
Go tell that to anybody who works with autistic kids.
Huh?
And your argument is over. Go tell that to anybody who works with autistic kids. And your argument is over.
But we're dealing with Trump and what? How are you making a correlation between autism?
You're trying to say that there is a link between intelligence and empathy and understanding people. No, absolutely not.
But that's, I mean, now
we
you're,
know that for a fact.
Now you're bringing up. I see what Lisa's saying. Now you're bringing up, that brings in a whole different thing. But there is a level of willful ignorance, really, because it's like, yeah, okay, someone raised in the desert, and they want, you're asking them to define snow. He could read a bunch of books and figure it out.
No,
he could
go read Oliver Twist,
Donald Trump.
Maybe you'll understand.
But here's the thing, until that point where you pull me out of the desert and throw me to the snow,
go watch The Color Purple.
I don't even know it exists. I have no reason to know anything about snow.
No, and I think you understand where
but
I'm saying.
But now he's the president,
and he does. Maybe ignorance was a wrong word to say. You understand what I'm trying to get at is if somebody...
I was hoping you were going to say he's a sociopath. In which case, I would have agreed with you wholeheartedly.
No.
Because I'm pretty convinced that he is at this point.
You think a sociopath, I feel like they are far smarter. Sociopaths are far smarter and understand things. And that's why they're able to do what they do.
That's the thing is, but if he was a sociopath, he would be better at hiding it.
No, sociopaths are never good at hiding it.
Most serial killers are sociopaths.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're pretty good at hiding it.
No, they're good at hiding themselves. They're not good at hiding. They're not good at hiding their tendencies. Nobody.
They are at least from the general public, from the world, when they're on national or international television.
Nobody who lived next door to John Wayne Gacy thought he was a swell guy. Everybody in the neighborhood knew the guy was screwed up. Mm-hmm. And Ted Bundy had a particular type of charm that let him get away with things. But Ted Bundy never stayed in one
place. We're comparing serial killers to our
president. Because here's the thing. So much media energy and so much breath has been wasted in the last 4 days. Why isn't Donald Trump coming out against racism? Why isn't Donald Trump coming out against racism? And then we jump to the left-wing narrative, which is it's because he doesn't want to alienate his alt-right base, his white supremacist base. No. He's not coming out against racism because Donald Trump doesn't get it.
Well, I think you do have some truth.
Is it a level
in
of
the
not
sheer
getting it or not understanding?
I'm going to tell you one of the secrets of this presidency.
I think he cares. I think he cares about absolutely the state affairs of what's going on in this country.
But he does in reflection to himself, not with empathy or sympathy for the people that he's supposed to be ruling.
But I'm hard-pressed to believe that somebody at that level, it's very, very rare, somebody at that level of success, lacks such the smallest amount of empathy.
You've heard of Hitler, right?
Empathy is not an asset in the business world, by any stretch of the imagination. I'm going to tell you one of the secrets to the Trump presidency. I'm going to tell you one of the secrets to how he got elected. And I'm going to tell you one of the secrets to how he stays in power and will continue to stay in power. I don't know if re-election in 4 years is in the cards at this point, but Donald Trump says things and Donald Trump does things. And against all of that, everything that comes out of him is essentially a blank slate that you cannot comprehend how somebody else would behave like this. And because it's a blank slate, and because he never expands on any of his thoughts, other than to double down on them and repeat them in different ways, it gives people on both sides the ability to project whatever motivations they want onto it. So the left can sit around and say, well, he's kowtowing to the white supremacists. And the white supremacists can sit around and say, hey, look, he supports us. The reality is that neither one of those things are true. Donald Trump doesn't care at all about any of this, because it's not relevant to what he's trying to achieve and what he's trying to accomplish. So he's going to make his statement.
So in a lot of ways,
away,
he is like Ted Bundy.
Let everybody come to whatever conclusion they want to and move on to the next thing that's meaningful to him. Because mm-hmm. that's all he knows how to process.
But that, again, the point that I was trying and am continuing to try to make is that if that's the way he is and that's why he stays in power and all of that, maybe that's true, maybe it isn't, but at least traditionally, every other president has at least been able to feign, if only to maintain the status quo. I do not remember, I've been alive for 31 years, and I've been paying attention to politics since I was a kid. I cannot remember a time of more volatile civil unrest in my lifetime. And I'm not saying that it's never existed, but I'm just saying it's like, and not even more volatile, but more consistent and frequent, in that he can't just like some main mistakes he made. Maybe mention the victim when you're talking about the things that happened. Maybe reach out to
her
mother.
Have you read the textbooks in the 50s? And
every
60s?
President that we've had in your lifetimes, and in fact, every president that we've had since I'll go back to Nixon on this. Every president that we've had since Richard Nixon, and even Nixon to an extent, had a tremendous amount of empathy.
That's what I'm saying. Is he could at least feign it. He could at least pretend, just for the sake of the dummies who can't see through it.
Here's what I'm telling you.
Falling for it.
This president doesn't even know what empathy is.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live it out of dreams.
And it's time for What's Hot, our favorite thing from this week. And actually, really, really sad news. Right near my work, a great after-work hang. But it's just a wonderful restaurant. Tavern Road on Congress Street, unfortunately, is closing its doors at the end of August. So I highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite places in the Seaport, Fort Point Channel area. I would go late night for it. They do bacon bites that are phenomenal. But they have great food, great drinks. So definitely check them out before the end of the month. Yeah, I know. I wish it was staying around. But
I hate hearing about that.
So Congress Street, end of the month. They're closing last day of August. So you got like two more weeks.
Thanks for the tip. So lots of great comedy shows coming up this weekend. But one that I found particularly intriguing that I'm excited to attend is at Laugh Boston in the Seaport District. They have something called Dirty Disney, and it's an offshoot of Boston's Unscripted Musical Project. And basically, it's kind of with suggestions on each show. It basically improvises while with some scripted all of your favorite Disney classics, but in a very adult manner. I'm just straight up intrigued by this. So if you want to come and hang out with me there, I will be there. It's at Laugh Boston at 10:15 on Friday. Not this Friday, sorry. On Friday, September 1st.
So one of the costume designers from Game of Thrones said that they've used Game of Thrones rugs to make the cloaks for some of the characters.
Oh.
And in fact, IKEA rugs to make these.
Oh, no way.
So.
Yep.
In response to this, the advertising company that represents IKEA in Norway posted online instructions for how to make your own Game of Thrones-style cloak using something called a fictional product called the Vinter Skuldervormer, which is based, it looks an awful lot like other rugs that they make. And it's very simple. You cut a hole in the middle of it and you put it around your neck. But this whole thing that they posted is drawn in the same style. It's the same people that draw their instructions. Mm-hmm. So it's drawn in the same style. And at the end of it, you turn into Jon Snow.
Oh, God.
That is how you do marketing right, my friends. Because
Krista Weiss, if you're listening, I know you're doing this weekend.
You took something that got a little buzz online, ran with it, ran with it in exactly the right playful way, and you got a mountain of publicity out of it on Monday. I love it when companies do stuff like this because it shows that they have a sense of humor, that they're plugged in, and that somebody over there is having some fun. What I don't like is when companies are like, well, we're ditching Donald Trump's counsel and we're upset about this TV commercial. No, this is how you do it, folks. This is what gets attention. For you Game of Thrones cosplayers, now you know where to go.
Did you write down how you thought the show's going to end and date it? And if you didn't, will you do it?
Not yet. Yeah, I will.
Will you do that tonight?
I will.
Because I want to prove you.
I've already watched episode 7, so you won't believe what happens at the end.
Go away.
The credits roll.
We end the show every week with that thing that happened, the craziest story from this week's news. Alabama, almost Florida. Incensed that he would have to share his Taco Bell tacos with his brother, who brought the takeout food home, the Alabama man grabbed a baseball bat and struck his sibling in the head, police allege. Ow. According to cops, the victim said that he went late night to a Taco Bell near his residence in Athens, a city 35 miles west of Huntsville. The man said that he, quote, brought my brother back some food and food for myself. I had a soft drink and he had a water, end quote. But when Tyrell Jukes, the victim's 19-year-old brother, realized that he had to share his tacos, he became irate and angry about not getting a soft drink himself. Jukes, cops allege, produced a baseball bat and struck his brother in the back of the head. When officers arrived at the residence, they discovered the victim bleeding from the head and subsequently transported by ambulance to a local hospital for treatment. Yeah, he was charged with second-degree assault, a felony for carrying maximum 10 years in prison. Dukes was held without bond in the Limestone County Jail. Record show.
That is one serious case of the munchies. A mother and father in nearby Florida, mother and father have been arrested for allegedly forcing children to eat dog feces and torturing them with a stun gun. Danny Lou Bullock, 33, and Amber Nicole Waldrip, 31, from the city of Parker, Florida, are accused of abusing at least one child while three other children watched. After a two-week investigation, officers issued arrest warrants for the pair on August 9th. Bullock is charged with two counts of aggravated child abuse, and Waldrip is charged with four counts of child neglect. Shocker, shocker, police also allegedly found crystal meth at their home.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Japan, the country that gave birth to the ninja, is now facing a ninja shortage. Nippon Television reported that there are not enough ninja performers to entertain crowds, with Ninja Village in Saga Prefecture only able to provide three ninja for its stage show. One Hokkaido theme park has posted a YouTube video to recruit ninja, but the problem could persist as low pay makes it very difficult for ninja performers to